is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with the author, Patrick O'Donnell. His new book, The Indispensables, the diverse soldier mariners who shaped the country, formed the Navy, and rode Washington across the Delaware. This is the story of Marblehead, Massachusetts, and its brave, self-sacrificing volunteers during the Revolution, which was also a civil war. Their neighbors were loyalists, and yet they survived the war, fought all the way through. We are now in 1776. The Marbleheaders have formed the Life Guard around Washington, in addition to having a Marblehead regiment with the Continental Army. Washington has moved his headquarters from the Siege of Boston, the British withdrew, to New York, to Manhattan himself. Washington is going to Manhattan. He's now headquarters on Pearl Street. He's guarded by the Life Guard, led by Caleb Gibbs of Marblehead and others. And there's an assassination plot. Patrick, a very good evening to you. Wonderful, the storytelling, especially the assassination of George Washington, and gets my attention. Who was behind this, and how was it put together? Good evening.
Good evening, John. This is the Loyalist Governor, Tryon, who is behind the plot along with other plots. And he tries, through his intermediaries, to recruit members of the Life Guard to assassinate George Washington. And there are a number of members of the Guard that have Loyalist leanings, including a guy by the name of Hickey, who's a former British soldier. And another member of the Guard is a guy by the name of Green, who's a drummer. And they meet up with a gunsmith who happens to be Tryon's intermediary named Forbes.
William Tryon is the Loyalist governor of New York. Please continue.
They meet at a grog shop, and they start to talk. And they talk politics. And before you know it, they're members of the Guard are actually raising their glass to the king. And, Forbes senses an opening, and he starts to, you know, work at the two men. And he's very clever about it initially. He sort of puts out a few feelers and then blows off Hickey and Hickey, but Hickey comes back. And then the plot starts to thicken, and they propose, basically the plan is that these members of the Guard will try to recruit other members of the Guard, and they will assassinate Washington, and then also blow up different powder magazines, etc., that are under the hands of the commander in chief.
So the plot was not only to kill Washington, it was to destroy the black powder again. It's always the British plan. If you deprive them of gunpowder, they cannot continue their fight. How was it found out, Patrick?
Well, what happens is Hickey gets nailed for trying to palm off a counterfeit bill. You know, at this time, money is scarce. It's either, hard money is hard to come by. So their colonies are printing their own money, and they try to palm off. Hickey tries to palm off fake money. And he gets arrested, and he and Green are both put in confinement. And what happens is, they had no idea that they were plotting to kill Washington, but these two men start to talk to somebody else in the jail cell. And then that individual basically rats on Hickey and Green and informs them that, hey, these guys were trying to kill Washington. And Washington has, he encourages something called a committee of intestines. Part of it, it's John Jay is involved in this. And this is really the birth of American counterintelligence, where they try to find out what these men did and knew. And, they're very successful on uncovering, elements of the plot. And it's the Guard themselves, under Gibbs, that arrests anybody else that was involved in it.
Hickey's the only one executed. Why?
Well, I think that this would have been a devastating blow, obviously. If the British had been able to kill Washington, it could have potentially ended the revolution. I mean, this is a leadership headshot, basically. But the other thing is, it's a PR disaster to have your own members of the Guard, you know, plotting against you along with other, in many other people. So Washington, it seems, we really don't know the motivation, but it seems like he only narrowed in on, focused in on one person. And that was Hickey, because it makes sense. He was a former British soldier, so it's easier to pin treason on him. And he is executed publicly in front of throngs of thousands of people.
In June of 1776 on Manhattan, we go immediately to late August 1776 on Long Island. August 29th, Washington and his army of 9,000 are trapped. They've been defeated by the British in the Battle of Long Island, and it would have been worse except for the Immortals, the Maryland Regiment that Patrick has written about at length prior to this. However, the uncritical part is not only that there was a way to stop the British offensive that would have overrun Washington and his lifeguard, but also how do they get off Long Island given that the harbor is filled with British ships. Patrick, you titled this chapter The American Dunkirk. It is profound. Washington is lucky again, not only with having the Marbleheaders, but also the weather. First of all, the Marbleheaders, how did they propose to get 9,000 men under the cover of watched by the British across the East River?
Yeah, John, this is really arguably one of the singular inflection points of the Revolution, where had the British been successful, they would have destroyed the Continental Army and probably ended the American Revolution. The army was, its backs were up against the East River. It was it was under siege by Lord Howe's army in Brooklyn Heights, and it was trapped there. And Washington had a decision to make. Does he continue to stand and fight, or does he retreat? And he wisely decided to retreat. And, you know, the atmospherics here, they're really, really spectacular. There is a nor'easter that hits the armies right after the Battle of Brooklyn, where, as you mentioned, it's Washington's Immortals make an epic stand. As one historian said, an hour more, buying us an hour more precious in our history than any other. This Thermopylae-like stand allows the army to escape into its entrenchments at Brooklyn Heights. And now Washington has a decision to make. And he decides to retreat, but the options are very, this is one of the most difficult military maneuvers to make, being under fire to make a river crossing, an evacuation in night. And, the men of the Marblehead Regiment are initially told that they are going to attack with the rest of the army. They then are the first to the boats, which are small boats, a variety of craft, all different sorts and sizes. And they have to do the impossible. They have to cross a mile long East River that is swirling. It is, it's not, there's currents, everything. Nothing is cooperating. The wind is not even cooperating for the Americans. They're not able to use their sails to get across the river. Nothing is working. In fact, they try to abandon the evacuation that night. The commander that's in charge, the overall in charge of the operation, tries to find Washington to call it off, but he can't find Washington, so it proceeds. A loyalist even tries to tip off Lord Howe and the British Army that the Americans are retreating, but, you know, a variety of things happen there. That doesn't work, and the operation proceeds going forward, and it's the Marbleheaders and their skill that ferries the army across, because they are trained in the most deadly seas in the world, the Grand Banks. So this is something that their skill set is very unique. And it's only they can bring them across in this harrowing hour.
Patrick presents a brilliant scene of complete despair. The army is trapped. The fog settles on New York Harbor. The boats are inadequate, and they're filled to the point that, Patrick, the detail here is there's 3 inches above the water. That's how many men and equipment. They take the equipment off first, thinking that if the equipment is gone, the army has nothing to fight with, so it will leave. The army starts at 10 p.m. It's raining, and the tides don't oblige. But at some point, Patrick, here's the miracle. The wind shifts sometime in the middle of the night. There's no way they could have planned that. but the marbleheaders, and they used cloth-covered oars. Was that to keep them quiet, Patrick?
It was, John. And the other thing that's really miraculous is the wind didn't shift for the British Navy. Had they been able to shift for their sails to sail up the East River, they would have intercepted Glover's men as they were going across in these small boats and blown it to smithereens. But the wind did not cooperate for the British. It then changed and cooperated for us. And that's just one of the first kind of miracles, if you will, because as, you know, as dawn starts to set in, there's chaos on the docks or the evacuation area. And it's Washington himself that's one of the last to leave. I mean, this is leadership at its finest. And I mean, one of the scenes that I have is he has, you know, enormous strength and he raises this giant boulder above his shoulders and says, I will sink this boat to hell if there's not order. And the men then, you know, fall in line. And it's at this point another miracle occurs and a fog comes in and screens the dawn and in the sun from the in the movement of the army across the East River.
The book is The Indispensables. Patrick O'Donnell is the author. We're headed to the Delaware River. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Patrick.